episode 388 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. Today's episode is a spotlight on Hunt for Wolverine. I'm going to be talking about Mystery and Madripoor, issue number 2. It's written by Jim Zub. The art is by Tony Silas. Color work is by Felipe Sobrero. And the letters are by Joe Sabino. This was probably my least favorite, or maybe it was right down there with my least favorite, with Claws of the Killer for the first episode, or the first issue, rather. Wasn't really feeling it, right? Like, didn't understand, okay, if this is the X-Men book, why is it only focusing on these female members? So, I don't know, and it didn't capture me. So, issue 2 definitely gets the award for most improved. I thought issue 2, story-wise, was a lot stronger. I was very much interested in what was going on. It was compelling. It was interesting. I definitely wanted to see what was going to happen next. That being said, I'm not sure what happened with the art. It's the same artistic team. Everybody. You know, the artists, the color artists, I don't know if they were rushed or I'm just not sure, but the art just, it took a step back for me. It felt a little more stylized, a little more cartoony. The figures were stiff. It just wasn't as good. It, to the point where it pulled me out of the story a little bit. So, I'm just not sure how it looks so different. Like, it looked so different to me that I actually went back to issue 1 to check and see, you know, did they change artists? Because I don't remember the art in issue 1 bothering me at all. But this issue, I just felt like the line work was really unnecessarily heavy. The rendering just wasn't particularly good. So, And it was the color. It was the color work too. It wasn't just the line work. Because when I went to look back at the first issue, I noticed that the colors were a lot brighter, and I think it gave the art a little more life. Because this one, it felt a little bit flat as well. So I'm sure that the art team, you know, that wasn't what they were planning on. I hate to be negative. As you guys know, I always try to see the brighter side of things. I know everybody's trying to do their best, but it was something that I noticed, so I just wanted to mention it. So let me get into the story itself. As Marvel frequently does, there's a recap paragraph in the first inside the front cover. It says that Logan's body's missing. Psylocke, Kitty Pryde, Jubilee, Storm, Rogue, and Domino banded together to track it down. They went to Madripoor. Their search led them straight into the hands of the Femme Fatales. Kitty, Domino, and Jubilee were able to escape. Psylocke, Rogue, and Storm were left in the clutches of the Femme Fatales. So this one opens up with flashbacks to pictures, I guess, from Wolverine's scrapbook. I'm not sure. Maybe Kitty's just remembering. She's remembering the first time she was in Japan with Logan. That's the Kitty Pryde and Wolverine 4-issue miniseries from the 80s. And just talking about how much Wolverine cares about the people in his life, that he'd give his life and his soul for the people that he cares about. And she really learned a lot from him. So we see Kitty, Jubilee, and Domino actually go into the sewers. Domino's bleeding, but she's able to carry on with the help of the other two. Jubilee creates a little bit of a light source, and they head for Wolverine's safe house. Meanwhile, on another part of the island, we see the other members of the X-Men that were captured, as well as the members of the Femme Fatales. What's cool is there's little dialogue boxes that give the names, the secret identities or alter egos, I guess you'd say, and then the powers of the particular members of the Femme Fatale. So I like that. It's a good touch because I think a lot of these characters aren't familiar. I mean, I'm not really familiar with any of them other than Viper. I don't know if they're even know if they're new characters or not. So it's nice to kind of get their code names, their alter egos, and then their powers. So they're pretty happy with themselves. They even compliment each other on the fact that they were able to defeat these female X-Men so fast. One of the members, Mind Blast, even says, "The Femme Fatales decimated the X-Men in a matter of moments." And Viper's telling him not to get cocky. So Viper says she'll speak to their client to see how they wish to proceed. Meanwhile, deposit these two special, these two with our special guest. So we're going to find out who that is in just a moment. The one we don't see is Psylocke. We're not sure what happens to her. So as Mind Blast and Knockout carry Rogue and Storm back into their holding cell, I guess you'd say, we find out their special guest is none other than Magneto. So that's pretty impressive that Mind Blast and Sapphire were able to capture him. And Mind Blast even comments about hearing rumors that Magneto was Omega level mutant, but not that it really matters because Sapphire Styx and her had their fun, and now Magneto's mind and body are as pliable and as pitiful as anyone else's. She also mentions that their new benefactors outfitted her with glorious technology that unlocked psychic abilities greater than she ever imagined. So the two villains lock up Rogue and Storm, and the scene shifts back to upstairs where Viper and the third member of the Femme Fatale, Snake Whip, are chatting with their benefactor. Not sure who it is. This looks like a bald guy. Again, just not really sure. But he seems to be a go-between because Viper says, "Tell your boss the plans are continuing on schedule." And they've managed to capture a few of the mutants. And then he asks about Sapphire. And she says, "Well, that's actually one of the reasons I called. Sapphire Styx's hunger is becoming an issue. She nearly sucked Magneto's soul dry before we could stop her. Now she's fawning over Psylocke." So, in fact, we find out that's where Psylocke is with Sapphire Styx, which probably not the safest place to be. So the gentleman says, "Mutant souls are potent fuel for the mistress and her kind. Better Styx takes their power than piling up corpses on the island." And then he says, "Focused on finalizing the delivery, that all that we are serves the will of Sotiera." So that must be the big boss that everybody's looking for. And Snake Whip isn't convinced that it's the best idea to just ignore Sapphire's increasing appetite. But Viper's like, "You heard the man. Let her feed." And so then the scene shifts to Sapphire Styx quarters, and we see her box. She doesn't actually have a alter ego, but she does. It does say that she absorbs life force energy through touch, enhancing her abilities and maintaining her youth. And she talks about just how intoxicating it was to feel the life energy of Psylocke. It was a surge of energy unlike anything she'd ever tasted before, and she feels like a spirit like Betsy's could keep her young and vital for months, maybe even years. But when she goes to suck that life energy out, she's very surprised to find out there's nothing there. She says, "No heartbeat, no breath. She's already dead." Then the scene shifts to our heroes in Wolverine's hidden storeroom inside the Princess Bar. Domino's getting patched up, and the women are talking about what the plan might be. Could they possibly call the Xavier Institute for help? And Kitty's like, "That's not really an option because all the calls off the island are monitored and it would give away our location." They talk about perhaps contacting Tiger, who was friends and lovers with Logan at one point, but most recently she tried to kill him, so she can't be trusted. So Kitty says, "We're going to change tactics." And she puts on one of Wolverine's eye patches. And she says, "We'll do what Patch would do. This is his city, and if we're going to survive, we need to play by his rules." Domino's like, you can't be serious. Says 100%. This isn't a place of law and order or proper protocol. It's all about hiding in plain sight and getting what you want with a swagger and a smile. So they get dressed up. They head out on the town and start looking for clues from dive bars, noodle stands, shadow-swept alleys to the nicer part of town, Hightown, with its neon-drenched streets, top-shelf liquor, and casinos. And finally, in one of the casinos, they notice that there's a gentleman that's being guarded by one of Viper's mercenaries, Bloodlust, who's a former mutant who now wields weapons as an assassin. And while Jubilee creates a distraction and Domino proceeds to beat the crap out of Bloodlust, Kitty Pryde grabs the guy and phases him through the wall, takes him out back, and tries to get some answers. Come to find out, he's a mathematician, and he was plotting flight trajectories for a satellite that was supposed to launch that very evening, but the bad weather delayed the flight, so he got to go out to the casino just to have some fun. When Kitty asks what the satellite's for, he says he doesn't know. When she asks where the launch pad is, he's like, well, I shouldn't say. So she phases him back into the wall and says, well, maybe I'll just ghost you into the wall and let go. It's like, no, I'll show you. And then the scene shifts, Rogue's waking up in the prison. She's unable to break free. And as she looks across, she sees Storm, who's not doing well. Longtime readers of the X-Men will know that Storm doesn't take well to being in small spaces or being incapacitated, tied up, anything like that. And that is, in fact, the reason that the bad weather is raging outside. Then the scene shifts back to Sapphire Styx. She's actually standing out on her balcony, enjoying the rain. And as she walks in, she says to herself, I haven't felt rain that primal in decades. How delightful. And then turns to Psylocke's body and says, too bad you died so soon, Betsy. Otherwise, you could have enjoyed it as well. Maybe I'll pop down to the dungeon and get a little soul snack to tide me over till morning. And then as she turns, she drops the drink she just made for herself and cries out, because sitting there is the one and only Patch. And he says, Sapphire, sweetie, you've been a real bad girl. You know what that means, don't you? Old Patch here is going to have to dish out some appropriate punishment. And he's sitting on the couch, and he actually has Betsy's head and upper body cradled in his lap. So, to be continued. Certainly an interesting turn of events. If it turns out it actually is Logan, you got to think that the femme fatales are in for a rude awakening. He could be just what the other members of the X-Men need, the female members need to put them over the top. And it's not to say it's anything to do with gender, but more to do with Logan's fighting ability, his ruthlessness, and his abilities as a leader, not to mention how inspired the female members of the X-Men would be to see him alive and kicking. So, as I said, I think the second issue was a vast improvement over the first. I felt like it was better paced. I felt like the couple of reveals, both of Magneto and Logan, were very well done. I was glad to see them. They were welcome surprises. I'm a little bit curious, though, how Magneto, who, you know, to Mind Blast Point, is an Omega level mutant. So the fact that these femme fatales were able to get a drop on him, I don't know, maybe it's because he was on his home turf, didn't have his guard up. But yeah, it was very surprising to see that that Mind Blast and Sapphire were able to capture him. I imagine he's going to figure into the upcoming issue as well, because as I said, Storm's kind of freaking out. So I'm sure in a way she's going to use that freak out to free herself, free Rogue, and most likely free Magneto as well. So I would expect that the femme fatales are going to have their hands full of some pretty pissed off mutants in the next issue, and I include Magneto in that group. So yeah, definitely the most improved. I wasn't overly impressed with Claws of the Killer issue 2, as many of you who listen to the podcast will know. I also thought Adamantium Agenda issue 2 was a step down from the first issue. I feel like the Weapon Lost was also a little bit of a step down from the first issue. That being said, I think Weapon Lost issue 2 is still my favorite of the second issues, but I think this Mystery in Madripoor moves right up there to a very close second. Because as I said, Adamantium Agenda did decline a bit more, in my opinion, than I would have liked it to. And Claws of the Killer just hasn't been my particular cup of tea at any point so far. So still not sure what's going on, though, as far as Wolverine. Is he back? Is it a clone? We're still in very much in a wait-and-see mode. But I'm starting to think in a couple of the issue threes, we may get some answers to the questions, right? Of, okay, are these clones or is it Wolverine himself? You know, what exactly is going on? It might be that we start to find out. So definitely looking forward to the next issue. All right, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I want to mention about the issue. You know, again, I think as far as the art being a little bit of a step down, I think maybe if the colors hadn't been so muted, I may not have noticed so much. But between the muted colors and the heavier line work and just different rendering, like a lot more cross-hatching, a little bit more stylized, it's just very strange. It's almost like Tony Stylus changed his art style between one issue and the next. Or maybe, you know, I haven't heard of him before, so maybe he's relatively new. So maybe he's still trying things out and trying to figure out what exactly his style is. That is possible. So again, I think the art's okay, not great. It's a little disappointing just because I did enjoy the art so much in the first issue. So, but yeah, other than that, I think the story's really great. I think Jim Zub's a bit of an underrated creator, really good writer. Seemed to enjoy the books I pick up from him. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of Comic Source. As always, we want to thank you all for listening. Please go to iTunes and find the podcast and subscribe. The other thing we really appreciate from you is any 5-star reviews you can give us on iTunes. It really helps to raise the visibility of the podcast and help new listeners find us. You can also subscribe on Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever podcast app you use on your device. So all past episodes are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder that Manny and I will be at San Diego Comic-Con here in a few short weeks. If you're going to be there, we'd love to meet up with you, take a picture, hear what you like about the show, and maybe what you don't like, and hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard as well. So please, 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 if you're going to be there, reach out and let us know. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.